He's not running for president anymore, but he still has plenty to say about the American political system. Lawrence Lessig is a Harvard law professor and author of the book Republic Lost.
He's a former candidate for the 2016 Democratic presidential nomination and ran on a platform of eliminating the influence of money in politics. Lawrence Lessig joins us now. Lawrence, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you make a distinction between a corrupt person, who we might say consider a criminal, and a corrupt institution. What's the difference?
Well, you know, a corrupt institution is one that has let itself become susceptible to influences that drive it away from its purpose. So think about Congress. Congress was supposed to be representative, dependent on, as Madison said, the people alone. But because of the way we fund campaigns, and because members of Congress spend anywhere between 30% and 70% of their time raising money to fund their campaigns, they've increasingly become dependent on funders as well as on the people. So that corrupts the basic purpose of a representative democracy when they are dependent on people that don't represent us. And that's a corrupt institution, even if all of them, were perfectly honorable people, never engaged in any bribery and any other criminal activity.
Well, and how do you see that playing out in what happens, what gets passed, and how American politics functions today?
Well, the most important thing it does is shift the priorities of what Congress cares about. Because, you know, if you spend 30% to 70% of your time dialing for dollars, you become incredibly sensitive, aware of the interests of the people who you're dialing for dollars from. And it turns out, obviously, they're not randomly dialing the telephone. What they're doing is calling a very, very tiny slice of the 1% who have very specific interests, very specific needs which they need served. And that begins to shift what Congress does. So, for example, in the first quarter of 2011, if you had said, what was the number one thing Congress spent its time working on? You know, we're in the middle of two wars. There's a huge budget deficit. They were about to shut down the government because of the debt ceiling. We hadn't done anything on climate change. There was a whole bunch of stuff with Obamacare that was still being worked out. The number one thing Congress worked on, both in the committees and on the floor of Congress, was something called the bank swipe fee controversy. And what that means is when you use your debit card, how much is charged to the retailer, and how much does the bank therefore get to collect? Now, that was the number one thing Congress spent its time working on, not because anybody went to Washington with concern of taking on the bank swipe fee issue. It was because when they would dance one way or the other, millions of dollars would be rained down upon Congress from the various interests who would benefit or be hurt by it based on what Congress does. So they begin to bend over backwards to make it easier to raise money rather than doing what they're supposed to be doing, which is answering what ordinary people want them to do.
So you're saying the agenda changes based on where this money comes from, and you also use the term bending a couple of times. Do you think that this bending toward the particular interests of money coming in, does that happen in an unconscious way, or is it something that's a more deliberate kind of congressional malpractice, say?
No, I think increasingly it is unconscious. You know, think about ordinary humans, and that's what they at least are. These members of Congress are at least ordinary humans. When you are so socialized, so routinized in paying attention to how you're going to be raising this money, you become incredibly vulnerable to the suggestions and the directions of people who are signaling to you what you need to do to be able to raise money. You know, much of this money comes through lobbyists, not themselves giving money, but channeling money from their corporate clients. And in that process, you become dependent on these lobbyists, and that dependence, becomes a natural thing for you. They give you favors. If you're human, in response to favors, you give favors. You give favors back.
Isn't it naive to assume that, in some sense, if we go back to, say, our founding fathers, that there were no special interests, even if it wasn't to the extent that we have it today? Weren't there always special interests?
Of course there were. Of course there were. And in fact, one of the things Madison, they thought they were doing was setting up a government that could neutralize the special interests. So there's always been money. There's always been special interests. But there's never been, in 100 years in America, the kind of concentration of funding that we see today. And we've not had, in the context of Congress, such an incredibly corrupted and crippled institution completely incapable of addressing the core problems that we have as a nation because it's so bent over backwards in the face of its funders and because of the incredible polarization that the way we fund campaigns helps to exacerbate. So what, you know, we need to be able to step back and say, look, it's not that we've ever had a pure time, but we have had times when government could actually work. It could actually function. And we've moved into a time where it is so dependent on these special interests, these funding interests, you know, what conservatives call crony capitalism, liberals call these special interests, whatever you want to call it, that it cannot function to do the job it needs to do, regardless of who's in power. You know, this is not a Republican-Democratic thing. It's a point about the institution itself that needs to be reformed.
Now, use the phrase again, concentration of funding. Describe that for us. How concentrated is that?
Well, you know, in this election cycle, 158 families have given half the money that's been contributed to the presidential candidates and their super PACs. 158 families. If you think about the total number of people who in the last election cycle gave the maximum amount allowed to just one candidate, that number is about 0.02% of America, no more than 50,000 Americans, right? So the point is, this is a system where to fund your campaigns, we are turning to an ever smaller number of people. And as you turn to a smaller number of people, those people themselves have an increasing amount of influence in the system. And again, it's not an influence necessarily to the left or an influence to the right. What increasingly it is an influence to basically block the government from doing anything. Francis Fukuyama says we've become a vetoocracy, a vetocracy. And by that he means that because there's such concentrated, powerful interests here, it's always possible for someone to exercise their power to block change or to block any improvement because it will benefit them to stop the improvement, even if it hurts all of us for that improvement to be stopped.
We're talking with Lawrence Lessig right now, professor of law at Harvard, author of Republic Lost, and also a former candidate for the 2016 Democratic nomination for president. And CNN is slated to host its final GOP primary debate of 2015 tonight. Is campaign reform on anybody's top 10 list right now, Republicans or Democrats?
Yeah, well, that's really great question. You know, YouGov did a poll in Iowa and among Democratic Party voters and asked if the next president could do just one thing, what should it be? And the number one answer was to fix this corrupted system of funding campaigns above every other, you know, standard issue, the wealth, minimum wage or health care or even ISIS at that time. But the candidates don't want to talk about this, and they don't want to talk about this on the Republican side because it feels a little bit like hypocrisy. I mean, that's what Donald Trump was trading on when Donald Trump made this such a central issue on the second Republican debate. And he said, you know, basically, I own all of you guys. I own Hillary Clinton, too. You know, he could say that because he wasn't depending on this outside money to fund his campaigns, but everybody else was. And on the Democratic side, Democrats have actually all committed deep in their platforms to really important fundamental change. But none of them are really talking about that change. The idea of changing the way campaigns are funded was not mentioned by any Democratic candidate in any of these debates so far. So the politicians don't raise this issue or talk about it. And what that means is ordinary people who, you know, understand the problem and think the system is corrupt, don't actually see a way to fix it because they're not being offered a way to fix it. And that's what leads many people to think that there's nothing we can do about it. We're basically stuck in this corrupted system and there's no way out.
Well, in 2002, there was bipartisan support for campaign finance reform with legislation from John McCain and Russ Feingold. That got rolled back in part in 2010. And then we had Citizens United, that decision, which removed restrictions from corporations on campaign spending. So what's changed, do you think, in the country since 2002, when there was pretty broad bipartisan support for campaign finance reform?
Yeah, I think the problem we've had with reform so far is we tried to do reform on the cheap. You know, the 2002 reform was basically trying to suppress the ability of different groups to spend their money. And that technique, you know, has been the standard technique for the last 30 years. I think we should learn it just won't work. It won't be allowed constitutionally. The Supreme Court has been striking example after example of that kind of regulation down. But it also doesn't actually change the way the system is working. Because even if you suppress the amount that's being spent, if you raise the mount your spending from this tiny, tiny fraction of the 1%, there still will be this distorting, corrupting effect inside the system. So the only way to solve this problem is to change the way we're funding elections. There are a couple ways people are talking about it. Republicans are talking about the idea of giving everybody a voucher so that they could use a small voucher that would be a rebate of their taxes that they would use to give to candidates who fund their campaigns with small dollar contributions. Democrats have talked about matching contributions, so if you give a small contribution, it gets matched by the government. But either of these two ideas would have the same effect. It would radically change the way we raise money. We would not raise money from this tiny, tiny few, but instead would raise money from many, many people. And now that would cost something, but if you think about how much money the government spends on corporate welfare, which the Cato Institute, a libertarian think tank, estimates is about $100 billion a year, the cost, which would be, you know, probably $3 billion to run a system like that, is a fraction of the amount that would be saved just by liberating Congress from the need to return the favors to these corporate contributors.
Given the current political climate right now, how close do you think that we would be to any sort of reform like the one you describe?
Well, you know, so long as no presidential candidate is talking about the reform, it's not going to happen. And even if they did talk about the reform, it would be a hard thing to achieve just because lobbyists in Washington would fight it as strongly as they possibly could. Because if we change the way you fund campaigns, it would radically weaken the power of lobbyists and therefore make them not as rich as they are right now. So, you know, I think that what we're unfortunately is seeing an election cycle which, though this issue is at the top of what people are talking about and what frustrates them, and I think largely what explains the excitement that people feel around Donald Trump, that he's at least somebody different, not beholden to these interests. Even though that's true, we're not going to see it so far. It seems like it's not going to become a central issue to the way this campaign is ultimately decided.
Lawrence, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Lawrence Lessig, professor of law at Harvard, author of Republic Lost, and former candidate for the 2016 Democratic nomination for president.